to an Independence Day episode of Tuned to Yesterday, bringing you programs from holidays past. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Coming up later in this hour, we hear comedy from the Penny Singleton Show from the 4th of July. But first, it's the Cavalcade of America with a very patriotic broadcast called Listen to the People. It was based on a poem by Stephen Vincent Benet and first broadcast as a special program on the 4th of July, 1941 on NBC. On the same network, a couple of years later, the Cavalcade of America program brought it back to life, which you'll hear next, first broadcast on July 5th, 1943.
DuPont, maker of better things for better living through chemistry, salutes 167 years of American freedom as it presents Listen to the People by Stephen Vincent Benet, starring Ethel Barrymore on the Cavalcade of America. On this day, when every American rededicates himself to those things for which America stands, Cavalcade presents Listen to the People by the great American patriot and poet, the late Stephen Vincent Benet. Listen to the People sounded a prophetic warning when it was first presented on the 4th of July 2 years ago. Tonight, we hear it in retrospect. At the end of the program, Miss Barrymore will read a salutation to Stephen Benet by another American poet, Carl Sandburg. DuPont presents Listen to the People, starring Ethel Barrymore on the Cavalcade of America.
This is Independence Day, 4th of July, the day we mean to keep. Whatever happens or whatever falls out of a sky grown strange. This is Firecracker Day for sunburned kids, the day of the parade. Slam banging down the street. Listen to the parade. There's J.K. Burney's float, red, white, and blue crepe paper on the wheels. The fire department and the local grange. There are the pretty girls with their hair curled who represent the 13 colonies. The spirit of East Greenwich, Betsy Ross, democracy, or just some pretty girls. There are the veterans and the Legion post. Their feet are going to hurt when they get home. The band, the flag, the band, the usual crowd. Good-humored, watching, hot, silent a second as the flag goes by. Kidding the local cop and eating popsicles. Jack Brown, Rosie Shapiro, and Dan Shrey. Paul Bunchik and the Greek who runs the Greek. The black-eyed children out of Sicily, the girls who giggle and the boys who push, all of them there and all of them a nation. And afterwards there'll be ice cream and fireworks and a speech by somebody, the Honorable Who. The lovers will pair off in the kind dark, and Tessie Jones, our honor graduate, will read the Declaration. That's how it is. It's always been that way. That's our 4th of July, through war and peace. That's our 4th of July. And a lean farmer on a stony farm came home from mowing, buttoned up his shirt, and walked 10 miles to town, musket in hand. He didn't know the sky was falling down, and maybe he didn't know so much. But people oughtn't to be pushed around by kings or any such. A workman in the city dropped his tools, an ordinary, small-town kind of man. Found himself standing in the April sun, one of a ragged line, against the skilled professionals of war, the matchless infantry who could not fail. Not for the profit, not to conquer worlds, not for the pomp or the heroic tale, but first and principally since he was sore. They could do things in quite a lot of places. They shouldn't do them here in Lexington. He looked around and saw his neighbors' faces.
Disperse, ye villains! Why don't you disperse?
Stand your ground, men. Don't fire unless fired upon. If they mean to have a war, let it begin here.
Well, that was that. And later when he died of fever or a bullet in the guts, bad generalship, starvation, dirty wounds, or any one of all the thousand things that kill a man in wars. He didn't die handsome, but he did die free. And maybe that meant something. Could be. Oh, it's not pretty. Say it all you like. isn't a bit pretty, not one bit. For that is how the liberty was won that paid for the firecrackers and the band.
Don't you know this is an imperialist, capitalist country, don't you? Don't you know it's all done with mirrors? The bosses get the gravy, don't you? Suppose some old guy with chin whiskers did get his pants shot off in a place called Lexington. What does it mean to me?
My dear fellow, I myself am a son of the son of a son of the American Revolution. But I can only view the present situation with the gravest alarm. Because we are rapidly drifting into a dictatorship. And it isn't my kind of dictatorship, what's more. The Constitution is dead, and labor doesn't know its place. And there's all that gold buried at Fort Knox. And the taxes. Oh. Why, what's the use of a defense contract if you can't make money out of your country? Oh, things are bad. Things are very bad. And if you let the working classes buy coal, they'll only fill bathtubs with it. Don't you realize the gravity of the situation? Don't you? Won't you hide your head in a bucket and telegraph your congressman opposing everything possible, including peace and war?
My worthy American listeners, I am giving you one more chance. Don't you know that we are completely invincible? Don't you? Won't you just admit that we are the wave of the future? Won't you? You are a very nice, mongrel, disgusting people, except, of course, for your Jews. But naturally, you need new leadership. We can supply it. We've sent the same brand to 14 nations. It comes in the shape of a bomb, and it beats as it sweeps, as it cleans. For those of you who like order, we can supply order. We give the order, you take it. For those of you who like efficiency, we can supply efficiency. Look what we did to Coventry and Rotterdam. For those of you who like Benito Mussolini, we can supply him. Now be sensible. Give up this corrupt and stupid nonsense of democracy.
Forget everything with the class struggle. Forget democracy.
Hate and distrust your own government. Whisper, hate, and never look forward. Look back wistfully to the good old, grand old days. The days when the boys said the public be damned and got away with it. Democracy is a nasty word invented by the Reds.
Just a little collaboration, and you too can be part of the new order. You too can have fine new concentration camps and shoes made out of wood pulp. You too can be as peaceful as Poland, as happy and gay as France. Just a little collaboration. We have so many things to give you. We can give you your own Hess, your own Himmler, your own Goering, all homegrown and wrapped in tissue. We've done it elsewhere. If you'll help, we can do it here. Democracy is dying. We will tear it apart with words and bombs and fear.
Democracy is a fake.
Democracy is a mistake.
Democracy is finished. We are the future.
The sky is dark now over the parade. The sky is an altered sky, a sky that might be. There's J.K. Burney's float with funny colored paper on the wheels. Or no, excuse me, used to be J.K.'s. But the store's under different management, like quite a lot of stores. You see, J.K. got up in church one day after it all had happened and walked out. The day they instituted the new order. They had a meeting, held it in the church. He just walked out, that's all. That's all there is to say about J.K., though I remember just the way he looked, white-faced and chin stuck out. I think they could have let the church alone. It's kind of dreary shutting up the church. But don't you say I said so. Don't you say. Listen to the parade. There are the pretty girls with their hair curled, back from the labor camp. They represent the League of Strength through joy. At least I guess it's that. No, they don't go to high school anymore. They get told where they go. We all get told. And now and then it happens like Jack Brown. Nice fella, Jack. Ran the gas station here. But he was married to a, you know who. Fond of her, too. I don't know why we never used to mind. Why she walked around like anybody else. kept her kids clean and joined the ladies' social. Just shows you, doesn't it? Well, that's all done. You won't see her in the crowd today, her, the kids, or Jack. Unless you look 6 feet under the ground, the lime-washed ground, the bitter prison ground that hides the martyrs and the innocent. And you won't see Dan Shea. Dan was a union man. We don't have unions anymore. They wouldn't even let him take his specs the day the troopers came around for him. Yet he needed specs. He had gray hair. Funny. You keep remembering things like that. Maybe he's still alive. It's hard to say. Listen to the parade. The marching, marching, marching feet. All with the same hard stamp. The bands, the bands, the bands, the flags, the flags. The sharp, mechanical, inhuman cheer dragged from the straining throats of the stiff crowd. It's independence. Sorry, my mistake. It's National Day, the day of the new order. We let it happen. We forgot the old bleak words of common sense, unite or die. We fiddled and we squabbled and we scrapped. We led a filibuster in the Senate. We were quite ready for a sacrifice sometime next Tuesday, but not yet. Not now. And the clock struck and the bad dream was here.
But you can't do this to me. I subscribe to the party fund.
You can't do this to me. We got laws. We got courts. We got unions.
You can't do this to me. Well, I believe in Karl Marx.
You can't do this to me. The Constitution forbids it.
I was always glad to cooperate. It looked to me like good business.
Looked to me like the class struggle.
Looked to me like peace in our time.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Democracy is finished. You are finished. We are the present.
That is one voice. You've heard it. Don't forget it. And don't forget it can be slick or harsh, violent or crooning, but it's still the same and it means death. Are there no other voices? None at all? No voice at all out of the long parade and march so many years? Out of the passion of the Puritans? The creaking of the wagons going west, the guns of Sharpsburg, the unnumbered dead, out of the baffled and bewildered hosts who came here for a freedom hardly known, rebel and exile, bond servant and outcast, out of the bowels of the immigrant ship, the strange sick voyage, the cheating and the scorn, and yet at the end, liberty. Liberty with a torch in her right hand. Whoever cheated and whoever lied, liberty for my children. Liberty slowly worked out, deceived 1,000 times, but never quite forgotten. Always growing, growing like wheat and corn. I remember a man named Abe Lincoln. I remember the words he used to say. Oh, we can call on Lincoln and Tom Paine, Adams and Jefferson. Call on the great words spoken that remain like the great stars of evening, the fixed stars. But that is not enough. The dead are mighty and are part of us, and yet the dead are dead. This is our world, our time, our choice, our anguish, our decision. This is our world. We have to make it now. 130 million of us have to and make it well or suffer the bad dream. What have we got to say?
I don't know. I'm a woman with a house. I do my work. I take care of my man. I've got a right to say how things should be. I've got a right to have my kids grow up the way they ought to grow. Don't stop me there. Don't tread on me. Don't hinder me. Don't cross me. I made my kids myself. I haven't got big words to tell about them, but if you ask about democracy, democracy is the growing and the bearing, mouth at the breast, and child still to be born. Democracy is kids and the green grass.
What have we got to say, people? You, people?
I guess I haven't thought about it much. I've been too busy. The way I figure it, it's this way. We've got something. If it's crummy, the bunch of us can change what we don't like in our own way and mean it. I've got a cousin back in the old country. He says it's swell there. But he couldn't change a button on his pants without an order from somebody's pet horse. Maybe he likes it. I'm sticking here. That's all. Well, sign me off.
You are listening to Ethel Barrymore in Stephen Vincent Benet's prophetic Independence Day drama, Listen to the People, first presented on July 4th, 1941, and repeated tonight on The Cavalcade of America, sponsored by DuPont.
People, you people living everywhere, Sioux Falls and Saugatuck and Texarkana, Memphis and Goshen, Harrodsburg and Troy, people who live at postmarks with queer names, Blue Eye and Rawhide, Santa Claus and Troublesome, people by rivers, people of the plains, people whose contour plows bring back the grass to a dust-bitten and dishonored earth, and those who farm the hillside acres still and raise up fortitude between the stones, millions in cities, millions in the towns, people who spit a mile from their front doors and gangling kids ball-playing in the street. All races and all stocks, all creeds and cries. And yet one people, one and always striving.
I'm on relief. I know what they say about us on relief, those who never were there. All the same, we made the park. We made the road and the check dam and the culvert. Our names are not on the tablets. Forget our names. But when you drive on the road, remember us also. Remember Johnny Lombardo and his pick. Remember us when you build democracy, for we too were part and are part.
One nation, one, and the voices of young and old, of all who have faith, jostling and mingling, speaking from the ground. Speaking from the old houses and the pride, speaking from the deep hollows of the heart.
I was born in 63. There were many then who despaired of the Republic, many fine and solid citizens. They had good and plausible reasons and were eloquent. I grew up in the age of brass, the age of steel. I have known and heard of three wars. All through my life, whenever the skies were dark, there came to me many fine and solid citizens, wringing their hands, despairing of the Republic because of an income tax or a depression, because their party had lost the last election, because we couldn't do this and shouldn't do that. And yet each time I saw the Republic grow, like a great elm tree, through each fault and failure, the stubborn rock, the parched soil, and spread its branches over all the people. Look at the morning sun. There's the Republic. Not yesterday, but there, the breaking day.
But my worthy American listeners, all this is degenerate talk. The future rolls like a wave, and you cannot fight it.
Who says we can't?
Who says so?
What's his racket? How does he get that way?
You mean to tell me a little shrimp like that could run the world? A guy with a trick mustache and a bum salute? Run us, run you and me?
You mistake me. Others have often made the same mistake, often and often, and in many countries. I never play upon a people's strength. I play upon their weaknesses and fears. I make their doubts my allies and my spies. I have a most convincing mask of peace, painted by experts, for one kind of sucker. And for another, I'm a businessman, straight from the shoulder, talking trade and markets, and much misunderstood. I touch this man upon his pocketbook, that man upon his hatred for his boss, that man upon his fear. I offer everything, for offerings cheap. I make no claims until I make the claims. I'm always satisfied until I'm not, which happens rather rapidly to those who think I could be satisfied with less than a dismembered and digested world. My secret weapon is no secret weapon. It is to turn all men against all men for my own purposes. It is to subjugate men's minds before their bodies feel the steel. It is to use all envy, all despair, all prejudice for my own work. If you've an envy or a prejudice, a nicely grown, well-rounded piece of hate, I'll play on it and use it to your ruin. I won't be beaten just by sitting tight. They tried that out in France. I won't be beaten by hiding in the dark and making faces. And certainly I never will be beaten by those who rather like my kind of world. Or if not like it, think that it must come. Those who have wings and burrow in the ground. For I'm not betting only on the tanks, the guns, the planes, the bombers. But on your own division and disunion. On your own minds and hearts to let me in. For if that happens, all I wish for happens. So what have you to say? What have you got to bet against my bet? Where's your own voice?
We've got a job to do.
We've got a road to hoe. We've got a land where men live free, and we mean to keep it so. Listen and hear us speak through lightning in the night. This is the people's cause. We are the people's might.
We built Boulder Dam. We built the TVA.
We built the cities up so high the eagles lost their way. Wasn't enough alone. Wasn't enough somehow. But we learned our trade from the licks we took. And we're building different now.
And that's why we turn the lathe.
That's why we plow the farms.
That's why a million of us learn how free men stand to arms. Not for the chains of lord and slave, the chains we left behind. But for all the years since Lexington and the years we've still to find.
Freedom to speak and pray.
Freedom from want and fear.
That's what we mean to build today. We mean to build it here. Build it and spread it out. Build it and make it stay. Till no one man shall dare to take another's hope away.
Justice and hope and right growing like wheat and corn. The old world died in its boots last night. The new world isn't born. We mean to see that it's born all right. For the decent and the free. For you and me and the folks next door. And the great word liberty.
Heard the long parade and all the voices that cry out against it? What do the people say? Well, you've just heard some questions and some answers. Not all, of course. No man can say that's all. But look in your own minds and memories and find out what you find and what you'd keep. It's time we did that, and it won't be earlier. I don't know what each one of you will find. It may be only half a dozen words carved on a stone, carved deeper in the heart. It might be all a life, but look and find it. Sun on Key West, snow on New Hampshire hills, warm rain on Georgia, and the Texas wind blowing across an empire, and all part, all one, all indivisible and one. Find it and keep it. And hold on to it, for there's a buried thing in all of us deeper than all the noise of the parade. The things the haters never understood and never will. The habit of the free. Out of the flesh, out of the minds and hearts of thousands upon thousands common men, cranks, martyrs, starry-eyed enthusiasts, slow-spoken neighbors, hard to push around. Women whose hands were gentle with their kids, and men with a cold passion for mere justice. We made this thing, this dream, this land unsatisfied by little ways, this peaceless vision groping for the stars, not as a huge devouring machine rolling and clanking with remorseless force over submitted bodies and the dead, but as live earth where anything could grow. Your crankiness, my notions, and his dream. Grow and be looked at. Grow and live or die, but get their chance of growing and the sun. We made it, and we make it, and it's ours. We shall maintain it. It shall be sustained.
Democracy's the morning when it's new. Democracy is kids and the green grass.
We shall maintain it. It shall be sustained.
Thank you, Ethel Barrymore.
Many men knew Stephen Benet by thought fixed in print. One who knew him as a friend as well is Carl Sandburg. For this performance of Listen to the People, Mr. Sandburg has written a salutation. I would like to read it to you now. Stephen Benet saw America standing for certain hopes and promises. Creeping towards this America, he saw strange shadows. He spoke his warning. Benet lived long enough to see his country living up to the finest of its past. He kept a heart ready for battle and a mind and voice that fought in the arena of ideas. How well did he know that men of ideas vanish first when freedom vanishes? The seeding motives of many historic forces move and shift with the writer, thinker, and dreamer who is gone from us. But his voice and a brave essence of him is still alive. Stephen Benet was a whimsical man, and would have pleased him to know that a radio play he wrote goes marching on like John Brown's body.
Next week, the Cavalcade of America will present Ralph Bellamy in Soldiers of the Cloth, an authentic and typical story of the Chaplain's Corps as it serves men in battle. Our play by Milton Wayne is based on the actual experiences of Chaplain Thomas M. Reardon, recently returned from the South Pacific.
The Cavalcade of America, from July 5th, 1943, from NBC. You are listening to our 4th of July broadcast on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark LeVonier. Coming up next, comedy for this holiday from the Penny Singleton Show. Singleton, at the time best known for her radio and film roles as Blondie, based on the comic strip of the same name. This broadcast from the show's only season on air from July 4th, 1950 on NBC.
It's the Penny Singleton Show.
Hello. Happy you're here.
Tonight from Hollywood, the Penny Singleton Show. Penny in our story is Mrs. Penny Williamson, a war widow and the mother of two girls, 13-year-old Deejee and 8-year-old Sue. We go back to yesterday evening to start our story. Penny is in the kitchen helping Margaret prepare dinner.
Here's some milk for the mashed potatoes. Need some help?
No, I always mash potatoes this way.
Deejee, Sue and I aren't going to do anything tomorrow. We're having a safe and sane Fourth.
Oh, how'd you ever talk them out of fireworks?
I have a new system for arriving at major family decisions. I'm the president, and Deejee and Sue make up the Senate and the House.
Yeah. I just wish they'd make up their beds. I can take care of the House.
Anyway, as president, I proposed the bill for no fireworks, and Congress passed it. We also voted you the day off tomorrow.
Well, thanks, Prez. You and Congress will always have my block of votes.
Thank you.
Well, I guess everything's about ready. Just need the powdered sugar for the shortcake.
I sent Sue over to Mrs. Duncan's to borrow a cupful. That's Sue now, at long last.
Now, I'll call Deejee and tell her dinner's ready.
Hurry up, Sue.
Here's the sugar, Mother.
Thank you. Sue, what took you so long at Mrs. Duncan's?
The usual thing. She grilled me.
And what did she want to know this time?
She asked me who I'd like for a stepfather, Judge Grundle or Mr. Wiggins.
Either way you answered, I'm in trouble. Whom did you say you wanted?
Joel McRae.
Sue, darling, why didn't you just take the sugar, thank her, and then run for your life?
I will the next time, Madam President.
Thank you.
Father, you've looked depressed all during dinner. What's the matter?
Oh, I've been thinking about Mrs. Duncan, D.G.
May I have another piece of strawberry shortcake, please?
Darling, you had a big piece. Where do you put it?
Same old place.
Well, if you think there's room, just a tiny slice. D.G.
Yes, Mother?
Does Mrs. Duncan ask you questions, too?
Well, sometimes. Yesterday, she was leaning over a back fence.
She's always leaning over that fence.
And she started a conversation about Judge Grundle and Mr. Wiggins. She asked which one I'd like for a stepfather.
And whom did you choose?
Well, I said John Wayne.
I'd rather have Joel McCrae.
There isn't a man living braver than John Wayne. Anyway, Mother, that's the type I told Mrs. Duncan I'd like you to marry.
Well, I'm glad you didn't express an opinion about the judge or Mr. Wiggins. She'd have made a mountain out of that.
Oh, and Mrs. Duncan did want to know if you'd had a big party lately.
What?
Well, she saw an empty wine bottle in the barrel we throw cans and bottles in.
Well, I hope you told her it was the cooking sherry that Margaret sometimes uses.
Well, I didn't get a chance because the cans made too much noise.
The cans?
Well, she was rooting around to see what we'd been eating lately. She thinks you're terribly extravagant.
Honestly.
More tea, Miss Williamson?
No, thanks. Margaret, I just heard that Mrs. Duncan inspects the barrel we throw cans in.
She does? Why don't we booby trap it?
Well, I'll go, Mother.
Thank you. I think the only thing for me to do, Margaret, is to have a straightforward talk with Mrs. Duncan.
Well, it might work if you can get a word in edgewise, like a knife.
Good evening, Judge Grundle.
Evening, D.G. Is your mother...
We're in the dining room, Judge. Come on in.
Oh, hello, Penny. Sue. Hello, Margaret.
Hello, Judge.
Hello.
Like some of my strawberry shortcake, Judge?
Thank you, but I don't think I'd better.
Why, Judge, you love Margaret's shortcake.
No. You see, the other day it was brought to my attention that I'm developing what is often referred to as a corpulent midriff.
You mean a pop?
Well, not exactly.
Susan, you're being fresh.
Mother, it's not Sue's fault. The judge started it.
Fiji's right, Judge. You did lead with your solar plexus.
Oh.
Margaret, no shortcake for his honor. And the girls will help you clear the table in a few minutes.
Oh, thanks.
I dropped by, Penny, to ask you something. I wanted to know if you... Penny?
What?
Anything wrong?
Oh, just Ida Duncan.
Oh. Well, I was wondering if you had any plans for the 4th tomorrow.
Yes, we do. We're not going driving on the highways, we're not going to set fire to the house, and we're not going to get ourselves burned or hurt. We agreed, didn't we, Congress?
Uh-huh.
Sue filibustered a while in favor of a couple of little firecrackers, but we won her over on a compromise.
A compromise?
I'm going to be allowed to eat more watermelon than I should.
Well, I think the idea of a safe and sane 4th is very good since you're a household of women, but... If you had a man here to manage things, I think you could celebrate a little bit without danger.
Judge, we had our meeting and we voted.
Madam President?
Yes, Sue.
I think we ought to count the votes again.
Now, Sue, you can't.
We wouldn't mind if Judge Grundle did everything. Sue and I just watch, Mother.
D.G., you voted in favor of a safe and sane 4th.
Well, we'll still be safe and sane, Mother. And the judge does have his heart set on it, haven't you, Judge?
Yes.
Judge, whenever I want Mother to change her mind, I hug and kiss her.
Penny, this is what I've wanted to do for years.
Now, stay right where you are, Judge. It wouldn't be safe, and you wouldn't be sane to try it.
Oh, Penny, now, really.
Answer the door, Sue.
Okay. It must be Mr. Wiggins. I can see his car out front.
Wiggins? Why is he always coming in at the wrong time?
After all, as my partner in the Williamson and Wiggins Real Estate Agency, he may want to talk over some proposition.
That's what I'm afraid of.
Oh, Judge.
Come on in, Mr. Wiggins. We're in the dining room.
Hello, Sue. Thank you.
Hello, Mr. Wiggins.
Hello, Penny. D.G., I just came over... Oh, Judge, you're here.
Yes, I'm here.
Now, Judge, Mr. Wiggins, you two start all over again and try being friendly. Go ahead.
Hello, Judge. Hello, Wiggins.
Oh, now, really?
Well, what do you want me to do, kiss him?
I give up.
Oh, good. Well, Judge, if you're leaving, just assume I've taken Penny's advice and kissed you goodbye.
I am not leaving. I came over here to take D.G. and Sue downtown to buy some fireworks for tomorrow.
Are we back on that subject again?
But that's what I came over to do, Judge.
Gee, Mr. Wiggins, looks like you read the judge's mind.
Yes, and it was about as dull as reading the telephone book.
Mother, if Mr. Wiggins wants to get fireworks too, you're just outnumbered.
Somehow or other, I never can win. I have a discussion with my daughters. They agree to give up fireworks.
Well, honestly, Mother, we do. We just want to watch the judge and Mr. Wiggins play with them.
I think I have that problem all settled. I'm about to relax when another problem pops up. And believe me, the problem next door is a beaut. And then two men walk into my house and discombobulate everything.
Yeah, well, what's the matter next door?
It's Ida Duncan's gossip.
Oh, Penny, Ida's gossip doesn't hurt anyone. You take it much too seriously.
Oh, she's constantly looking over my shoulder.
Oh, it's not as bad as that.
Isn't as bad as... All right, I'll prove something to you. Ida Duncan is watching us right this minute.
Oh, no.
And I can prove it. Sue, dear, go pull down the shades.
Okay.
I don't get it.
I can prove Ida is watching because as soon as both the shades are down, the other one too, Sue, Ida will be over here in 10 seconds. She'll have to know what's going on.
Start counting, Mother.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
You mean
eight,
that she?
9, 10. Rita. Come right in, Ida.
Oh, hello, Penny, my dear. Oh, I didn't know you had company.
Hello, Ida.
Oh, hello. Why is everybody staring at me?
She's not even out of breath.
Jet propelled.
You see, gentlemen?
Oh, well, I don't understand. I just came over to borrow a few pieces of
gossip?
Yes. Oh, no, Penny, I don't know what you mean.
Judge, Mr. Wiggins, would you excuse us, please?
Oh, yes,
Ida,
yes,
let's go into the living room. I'd like to have a little talk with you.
Oh, my dear, is it something you want to keep a secret?
What I'm going to tell you, Ida, you may tell to the world.
But, Penny, how can you say these things to me, your dearest friend?
I'm only saying what's true.
But you're wrong. You're wrong. I never talk about you.
Maybe you don't know you gossip. The other day, the butcher asked me how my diet was coming along. I'm not on any diet, but he told me you said I was.
Diet?
Yes. Where'd you get such an idea? This isn't important, Ida, but I'm using it as an example.
Oh. When you gave away some of your clothes to the Salvation Army last week, they stopped at my house next, and I noticed that green dress of yours, which seemed perfectly good, so I assumed...
But why tell the butcher?
Well, we were discussing the fact that you bought rather expensive cuts of meat.
Does he tell everyone what I buy?
Oh, no. You see, his account book happened to be open on the table, and I just happened to notice what your bill was last month. And, well, buying so much meat fitted in with the diet, so I put two and two together.
So that's how Charmaine at the beauty parlor knew what my butcher bill was last month.
She did not hear that from me. I'm positive she heard it from Bernice Harrington.
Why, Bernice?
Because she's the one I told about your bill.
Oh, Ida.
Oh, I guess I just have a naturally inquiring mind, I guess.
Ida, I'm not objecting to your mind. It's your tongue. This time, when you put two and two together, it didn't hurt anyone. But someday,
oh,
Ida...
Oh, Penny, I never realized that I talk so much.
But do you now?
Oh, of course. And I'm going to watch myself like a hawk. Never let it be said that Ida Duncan knowingly would do anything to her.
Well, I'm sure you don't do these things knowingly, Ida. You've got to watch,
now, dear,
darling.
I've got to run now, but believe me, I appreciate everything you've told me. It takes a friend to tell the truth to another friend.
Ida, you've got to watch.
Now, dear, I'll watch myself like a hawk. Now, good night, dear.
Good night.
Well, Ida leave?
Yes.
Well, did you tell her?
Penny, if Ida's left, could we,
I told her, but...
Well, didn't she understand what you were trying to tell her?
Yes, but she got it too fast.
Well, if she got it, that's enough. Now, what about the fireworks for tomorrow?
Oh, dear.
Please, Penny. Yes, Penny, please, huh?
All right. But we won't buy them until tomorrow.
Well, why wait until tomorrow?
Because maybe they'll be sold out of everything by then.
Thank you.
It's the 4th of July now, and we find Penny and her family with Judge Grundle and Mr. Wiggins in downtown Middleton. They are entering a store that sells fireworks.
Oh, dear, they've still got a lot of stuff left.
Best fireworks in town here.
Well, we just want some little firecrackers, if they have them, and sparklers.
Boy, we're lucky they're not sold out. It's so late in the day.
Hello. Oh. May I help you?
Yes. We want to buy some fireworks that won't do anything.
What do you mean, madam, that won't do anything?
Well, I don't know how I can put it any other way. We want fireworks that won't do anything.
Madam, if one goes to the trouble to strike a match, then light a fuse, one certainly wants something to happen, doesn't one?
Yes, but not very much.
Oh, now, Penny, you certainly want to get a couple of things that are fun.
We really don't care, Judge.
I'd like some sparklers.
Well, otherwise, Penny, we might just as well light a candle and sit there and watch it burn.
Let me show you some wonderful new things that are out this year. They're absolutely spectacular.
Judge, Mr. Wiggins, let's get the little firecrackers and sparklers and get out of here.
Now, here's something novel.
Oh, look what he's got.
Oh, this is a real Jim Dandy.
It's enormous. What is it?
It's called the magnetic mind bomb. Go within 3 feet of it with a lighted cigarette and it goes off.
Say now, hot dog. Hey,
it's a killer, huh?
You can say that again. I'm sorry, but...
Oh, here's something else. It's sensational.
Don't they have any sparklers, Mother?
Now, this foot-long firecracker is called the atomic firecracker. It's our own little joke, but we recommend that the purchasers of this little baby have concrete bunkers built in their yard.
Now, really?
Boy, oh boy, if they'd had those when I was a kid.
When you were a kid, the Chinese hadn't invented gunpowder yet.
Judge, Mr. Wiggins, please tell the man.
Oh, please, madam. Let me show you the piece de resistance.
Look, you, I'm going to resist everything. All we want...
Look at this, madam. The most sensational fireworks ever invented. I'm told the plans for it were stolen directly from the Russians.
Jeepers, look at that, John. Holy mackerel, I've never seen anything like that.
Me either. What's it called?
This? This is the Moscow Mule Blockbuster.
Holy torpedo, that does it. Come on, girls. We'll get our little firecrackers and sparklers somewhere else. This place frightens me. Home at last. Imagine going to 3 places before we could buy little firecrackers and sparklers.
Whew, it's warm.
Oh, Mother, maybe it'd be nice to have supper on the side porch, sort of picnic style.
May I help in the kitchen?
There's not much to do. We're going to have cold fried chicken.
And watermelon.
I'll help you with the salad, Mother.
I think I'll go out and get the sparklers set up in the lawn by the porch. Once it starts to get dark...
Oh, Mr. Wiggins, you could help if you'd take the dining room chairs out on the porch.
Okay.
Well, this is turning out to be a very pleasant 4th of July after all.
Of sparklers here for his nose.
Chairs and table all set up, Penny.
Then you're through, Mr. Wiggins. Dinner will be ready in about 30 minutes.
Everything set up, Judge?
Yep, yep. Did a picture of George Washington with the sparklers.
Washington? Mm. He's got 3 eyes there.
That one is his nose.
Well, then why is it looking at me?
Look, Wiggins, if you think you can do any better, you
Hello
can
Hello there. Happy 4th of July.
Hello, Ida. Hello.
Oh, how cute, Judge. You've made a Christmas tree with the sparklers.
Christmas tree, that's very good.
That's enough.
Well, I'm going to watch your fireworks, too. Penny just called and asked me to join you. Oh, there's a wonderful woman.
Ida, that's the most accurate thing you've ever said.
Yes, we know her pretty well, too, Ida.
Oh, but not like I do. Appearances can be very deceptive if it takes a woman to understand another woman. I also know Penny through her children, too, you see. And the children always reflect the mother.
Like how?
Well, for example, just yesterday, Sue blurted out she'd like to have Joel McCrae for a father.
Is he in town?
Paul, you don't understand. It's what Joel McCrae represents to Sue, and therefore to Penny. McCrae is the Texas Ranger. Guns, noise, adventure, daring.
Well, I can be daring at times.
Oh, Judge, I'm afraid you're the sparkler type. And there's D.G., too. She'd like John Wayne for a father.
Yeah, another shoot-em-up, bang-bang type.
Well, knowing you two, it's so easy to understand why Penny never remarried. She's just never found another daring type like her husband, Commander Williamson.
Oh, I wouldn't be so sure of that.
Well, I'd better go in and see if I can help her in the kitchen.
Yoo-hoo, Penny. Come on in, Ida.
Joel McCrae.
John Wayne.
If Penny's appearance is deceptive, other people's appearances might be deceptive, too.
You mean, like us?
Yeah. The sparkler type. How do they know I'm not... How soon did you say Penny would have dinner ready?
Oh, in about 30. Daring type. Shoot 'em up, bang, bang. Judge, you thinking what I'm thinking?
I am, if you're thinking we could get to that first fireworks store and still be back in time.
Oh, sure we could. She wants shoot 'em up types. She's got 'em. Come on.
Let's saddle up, McCrae. Okay, Wayne.
Judge and Mr. Wiggins are certainly having fun.
Do you think the judge was really a Texas Ranger once, Mother? Like he said at dinner?
Oh, I'm sure he was making it up. Just like Mr. Wiggins made up that pearl hunting expedition in the Pacific.
Funny. Somebody else I heard about had a ship called the Red Witch.
This has been wonderful. Everything about used up, Judge, Mr. Wiggins?
Show's just beginning, folks.
Beginning?
Ladies and gentlemen, next comes the major attraction of the evening.
What he means is, here's where we separate the men from the boys.
I have a funny feeling they aren't talking about sparklers.
Here we go!
Mother, look, Mr. Wiggins is opening packages and packages of more fireworks.
What in the world? Now listen here, Judge, Mr. Wiggins, you just
stop that. Stand back, everyone! We're shooting them up tonight!
Yeah.
Look it!
Oh!
No!
Here's some more butter, Mother.
Thank you, D.G. Ida, put some of it on Mr. Wiggins' hand.
All right. Here, Mr. Wiggins.
And now for you, Judge. Where else does it hurt?
Well, here and here and here.
I see. I'll just rub a little butter. Hold still. There.
Well, that's better. It's kind of
soothing. It's just a little blister, Judge.
Well,
oh, be careful, Ida. You're not buttering a piece of toast.
Mother, I'd still like to know. What happened? Yes, boys. Exactly what got into you? Did you have this little stunt planned all the time you were cooperating with me on having a safe and sane Fourth?
No.
No, he didn't, Penny.
Then what made you change?
Well, John Wayne here decided to...
Now, just wait a minute, Wiggins. Joel McCrae was mixed up in this, too.
John Wayne? Joel McCrae? Well, those two are connected with a private family joke among D.G., Sue, and me. But how did you two...
Oh, my, it's late. Penny... I really think I should be running along now.
I want an explanation, gentlemen. D.G., Sue, did you talk to the judge or Mr. Wiggins about John Wayne?
No, Mother.
Nope.
And I certainly never mentioned Joel McCrae or Ida.
Yes.
You were the only other person who... And you put two and two together again.
Ida Duncan.
We were trying to be the daring type.
Yeah. Bang, bang.
Penny, I didn't say a thing that could cause any damage.
You didn't? Look at those two. Have you ever seen anything more damaged than they are?
Well, I simply said...
I'm so disappointed. And after you promised last night...
Mother, what's happening?
What?
Who is it?
Who owns the house next door?
Why, it's mine, Ida Duncan. Why?
Fireworks set your fence on fire. Better hurry.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, say we'd better help, Wiggins.
Yes, yeah.
Oh,
God,
what are you doing? Mrs. Duncan's back fence is already gone.
Oh, dear, that's too bad, but... Wait a minute. This may teach Ida a lesson. Now she won't have a back fence to gossip over.
The judge and Mr. Wiggins are just standing there arguing over how to put the fire out. Do something, Mother, do something.
Holy torpedo, there's only enough butter left for breakfast. Deegee, go turn on the lawn sprinklers before John Wayne and Joel McRae hurt themselves again.
The Penny Singleton Show, on Tuned to Yesterday from the 4th of July, 1950 on NBC. And that does it for this July 4th celebration with Radio's Past on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from Radio's Yesteryear. And until then, I'm Mark Levonier. Thanks for listening and happy Independence Day.